So I have not seen you guys for a long time. It's kind of weird. I'm sitting here thinking to myself, oh my God! My head is spinning. That would be dukkha, which is what we're going to talk about. Not the dukkha that Tim talked about, but we're going to talk about some distortions. Tim and I talked before I left. And we thought, okay, so when we only have one teacher, there's a continuity about the talks. But if you have more than one teacher, sometimes it can get a little crazy because everybody can come and talk about something different. So we thought we would try like linking everything together. So Tim talked about the Four Noble Truths last month, and I'm going to talk about an extension of that Four Noble Truths with the Four Distortions. And a way you can think about it is that I'm going to talk about the unconscious sort of energy that's pushing everything that we do, and it's a distortion. We're going to talk a little bit about how that distortion shows up. How it shows up and what it means that it shows up. I want to talk about it generally first. This is how I think we'll do it. So there are four distortions, and each week we're going to talk about one of the distortions. And then on the fourth Tuesday, we will talk about the last distortion, not have a summary so much, but talk about the last distortion, and then have a discussion night on all these distortions and see how they show up. I'm hoping that tonight I make sense. I'm really questioning that, whether it's going to make sense. You know, it's sort of like when somebody comes back from a retreat and you're like, how was it? It's like, I saw this flower and then everything opened up and I was free, and you're just sort of thinking, oh my God. So in a way, I feel like that. It feels like I want to talk about this freeing possibility. I'm talking absolute, and not talk about it in such a way that it doesn't make any sense, that it sounds kind of contrite, or it sounds, simplified. It is quite simple. But I don't want it to come across as if it's some kind of archaic, theoretical thing, because it's not that. It is in reality right here, right now, anytime. And so my hope is that somehow I can not get lost in the stillness of retreats, especially when you do 2 months, then you're really lost in stillness. If I can not get lost in that, stay here and talk to you about something that I think is, it is life-changing. So these distortions, they have nothing to do with you. And they have everything to do with you. It is the nature of the way our minds articulate what data it takes in. So if you think about it, the mind, I've heard that the mind takes in like hundreds of thousands, billions of pieces of data continuously. It's taking in all this data. We don't know that. We're not paying attention to any of that. You are looking at me, and I am looking at you, and that's it. There's probably some thoughts going on in there, like, oh my God, did I lock the car? Did I turn off the stove? I mean, there's all that stuff going on. But there are thousands of pieces of information that your mind is taking in, that your brain is connecting to continuously. If we were to try to connect on that level of all this data coming into the mind, it could be a little difficult. If you're still, you wouldn't necessarily get thrown off by all the information that's coming in. But we don't live in this state of stillness all the time. And so we would be thrown about by all of the constant data coming in. We would imagine you would be thrown out by every sound that you heard from outside, inside. If you heard a sound outside, you'd look outside. If you heard a sound inside, you'd look inside. There's a way that the mind does a little mind trick, little magic trick, sleight of hands. So, if you hear a familiar sound, something that the mind thinks is familiar, it just sort of chalks it off. You don't even hear it. You don't even know that you heard it. You hear some sounds outside. The only time you're even going to begin to consider what's going on outside is if you hear something that's unfamiliar, or you hear something that you think is a bad sign. So that distortion, this level of distortion that we're going to talk about, is operating in all of us, whether you want to accept it or not. And that, and these four distortions that we are going to talk about, to me, are like the root cause of our suffering. I think Tim said something about, I listened to his talks, and so I wouldn't just repeat a whole bunch of stuff, but he talked a lot about this kind of unconscious dukkha. This dukkha that's unconscious, we don't really see it. It's pushing us, driving us. It's almost driving that tanha he talked about, that ultimately that thirst that we then begin to react on. So if we back it up, we see ourselves doing something. He used an example of eating cookies. So we see ourselves eating a cookie. We know we shouldn't eat the ninth cookie, but we thought we should have stopped at seven, but now we're going to number nine. It's sort of like they have these cupcakes at QFC, and they come in 12 packs and 6 packs. They're so good. And I used to tell myself, I'll get the 6 pack, because it's only me in the house. I'll get the 6 pack, I'll eat one a day, and that's it, right? All 6. So, you know, I don't get those cupcakes. I walk by them, and I'm like, dang, I wish I could get those cupcakes, but I'm not getting them, because I know if I get them, I'm going to eat them all. So the dukkha that we see is on the end when you're eating the 6th cupcake. You could look back on that, right? One step back, he talked about, is this kind of, which is the tanha, this thirst, this craving, somehow these cupcakes are going to satisfy some urge, some need that's there. That's the next step back. These distortions are one step back from that. One step back, there is a distortion that usually drives the craving that then drives our action. And when you begin to see this distortion, it's a whole different way of seeing. Because if I look at eating the cupcakes and thinking something's wrong with that, and then I go one step back and I see the craving, I can see how it's connected to some sadness or some unpleasantness, and I'm trying to take it away by eating these cupcakes. Or I'm just watching TV, and every time I eat one, I'm like, oh, that's so good. Is that the last one? Oh, no, just one more. I'm going to eat one more, and then that's it. It could be that, you know, just kind of this mindless eating of it. But the distortions, the reason why I think these distortions are so, it's sort of like I sometimes can't even believe that Buddha saw this, but the reason why the distortions are so important is because they are the most ridiculous thing you've ever heard yourself think or do. They're so outside of reality that unless you see it, you won't be able to tell that it's outside of reality. Does that make sense? All right, let me go again. Eating a whole bunch of cupcakes, overeating, doing some habitual thing, we can see the cause of that. We can say, oh, I am stressed out right now and I just need to chill out. Watching TV, I'm just stressed out, I just want to chill out. We can see that it makes sense that I am watching TV. It makes sense. We can see it as dukkha, we can see it as a habit, we can see all that, we know all that. But the distortions don't make any sense at all when you see them. When you don't see them, they drive our entire lives and we are operating under these distortions. When you see the distortion, it is laughable that you are actually following something as ridiculous as it is. So, you may not see that right now, but I'm hoping by the end of tonight, you will at least see it with impermanence. You'll at least walk out of here and say, oh my God, I'm going to have to work on this whole impermanence thing because I'm getting too trapped in it. So let me tell you what the four are. Taking that which is impermanent to be permanent. That's what we're going to talk about tonight. Taking something that's impermanent to be permanent. Second one, these aren't the necessary, I mean, I'm just going to say all four of them. Pursuing satisfaction from something that is unsatisfactory, right? Thinking something is going to satisfy you and it cannot satisfy. Assuming that there is a self where there is no self. And then the fourth one is seeing something as attractive when it's not attractive. So we're going to talk a little bit about, I want to talk a little bit about just the first, just a little bit more about generally what these distortions are called. So the Pali word, and I'm not very good at Pali, but the Pali word is vipalasa. Vipala, what is it? Wait, vipala. I'm done. Vipalasa. I can't do it. I'll spell it for you though. It's V-I-P-A-L-L-A-S-A. So my friend told me it sounds just like Vipassana, except it has L's, but clearly I'm not getting that there. Anyway, so it's translated. That's the word it's translated to mean distortions. It's also translated as the word perversion, like it's perverted. Your thinking, your perception, your view is perverted. That's kind of a tough word there. In the suttas, it's also translated as inversion. So it's inverted. Whatever you think, for those of you that have kids, I don't know if your kids ever had school that had opposite day. So everything is the opposite of what you say or what you do or how you act. That's the way we live our lives, in this opposite of what the truth is. We walk around in these distortions that are actually the opposite of the way things actually are. But the way that the mind constructs reality for us, we don't know that we are seeing something that is the opposite of what it actually is. They show up, these perverted way of thinking, these distorted ways of looking at things, they show up in three different, I guess you could call them levels, but Andrea Fella, she called them levels, but three different ways, three different aspects, three different areas. So I'm going to start at the top and then work down. Because for me, it flows more like that. But we'll see about going from the bottom up what that would look like. But from the top, looking down, Andrea Fella calls, it affects our view, and she calls it the human view. So if you think about it, seeing something, and I'm just going to use the impermanent, seeing something that's impermanent as permanent is a human view. It is something that only humans see. Only us, right? Everything in life is impermanent. Everything in life, everything in nature, everything about our existence is impermanent, and we know that. But we live our lives the opposite of that. We live our lives as if everything is permanent. So it is this flip-sided way of perceiving everything. It is like me thinking that somehow or another the sixth cupcake is going to actually do it for me, right? The first one didn't, second one. At some point, if you were sitting next to me, you would look at me and say, Terry, this is your fourth cupcake, really? But when I'm sitting there, I don't see any of that. And even though I'm using me and my cupcakes, this is the same for you. You don't see it either. When you are doing that habit over and over and over, you don't see that you're doing this habit over and over and over, this kind of sleight of hands. So this overall, Andrea Fella calls this human view, is this view that is the foundation of that distortion. So the distortion itself, taking something that's permanent, that's impermanent, that overall view is this human view. There's one step down from that. It is perception. And our perception is then colored by what Tim was talking about, the dependent origination. This kind of the moment a connection happens between one of our senses and some contact with some phenomena, some experience, it affects our perception. And then the third layer down would be our thoughts. So think of it like this. We have some experience, some connection, some contact, and from that contact, we don't recognize that it is distorted in what we see, in what we perceive. The famous example they use is, you know, and I think I can remember Tim using this, is that you see a snake, you see a hose and you think it's a snake. You see a stick and you think it's a snake. And then you have this perception that that is a snake, or this is dangerous. Now, if you see that it's not a snake, you see it's a stick, then you just sort of pass that by and, oh, laugh at yourself, no big deal. But mostly the way we live, it turns out, is that we don't see that it is a stick. We see something, perceive it as a snake, and then go the other way. We never even check to see if it's a stick or a snake or anything. We just assume that that becomes true, and then our thinking goes on from then on out. I really like urban practice because I like the sort of spontaneity of things just showing up. But the one thing that's good about going on retreats is that you do take away some of the extra stuff so that you could begin to focus your attention and see things that you would otherwise not see. And so one of the reasons why I'm talking about the distortions is because that's what I looked at for 2 months. And I had some powerful moments with them. So, some perception, it comes at us in a distorted way, and then we begin to carry on in our life as if it's true. The perceptions is where it's sort of like we're just like mindlessly going through life. We're not really paying attention. I mean, I think I would not eat 6 cupcakes if I actually paid attention. You can't really do it. If you pay attention, then you kind of shift your thoughts about it. But mostly I could eat 12 cupcakes if I bought the 12 pack because I am not paying attention. I'm just experiencing the taste of it. And in reality, I'm probably experiencing the taste of the first one, and I haven't let that go. And I'm eating the other 11. Whew, that's a lot of cupcakes. But in our perception, we don't see these things that are happening. We don't see the link that the mind makes between some contact and some phenomena, some sense door and some phenomena. We don't see that contact. We see whatever the flavor is that the mind creates around it. And then we begin to develop opinions, thoughts, agendas, ideas, judgments, all of that around some contact we've had. Think of all the opinions you have about people. I mean, I can think of opinions and judgments I made about people from back when I was in school that I still think those people are that way. I have friends that I knew in high school that when I see them or talk to them, I'm just like already hearing everything they say out of what I thought they were like in high school. I'm not even going to tell you how long ago that was, how different they probably are, right? But that's not the way we see life. We don't even question it. We don't even judge it. We don't even consider that our opinion or view or judgment about someone or something is incorrect. This has to do with all four of these perceptions. I'm only talking about them generally here. In a minute, I'm going to start talking about the impermanent itself. But generally, we don't question any of the backdrop about our opinions. So let me go a little bit further, though. By the time we get to, from our basic perceptions, that we see this dependent origination of contact with things, we start forming all our opinions about life and judgments about things. We just take it as fact. We just assume it's true. So let me see if I can give you some perspectives about how easy this is to do this. Thinking more in terms of I guess what Tim would be saying, let me back up for a minute. What Tim called this was, this is the ignorance by which we create tanha. It's the ignorance that's behind everything. So let me give you a couple examples. So 2 weeks into the February part of the retreat, I'm struggling with almost every sit. I'm sitting there having all this pain and emotional drama, thinking, I'm struggling, I'm doing all my little skillful means because I know how to have a good sit. Working. And then it happens. Concentration, very nice sit, very peaceful. So happy. And it happens again. Probably about two or three sits in a row. So I decided, oh, finally, I finally have arrived. I finally have gotten here, moved past all that drama, all the difficulties. Everything's okay. So I sit down unexpectedly, planning to have my little good sit because I've had these good sits, so I know it's going to be good. Nothing. I think, okay, just kidding. It's okay, just sit still, everything's going to be fine. Nothing. I was wide awake. I could open my eyes, there's like nothing. I can't even sort of focus my attention on the breath. I'm just sort of sitting here. Nothing. So my mind immediately decided that I had lost my concentration. I can't believe I did this. I lost the concentration. It's gone. And I remember sitting through that whole 40-minute period, conjuring up in my head what I was going to do for a month and a half that I had left with no concentration. I just was sitting there thinking to myself, oh, I don't understand. Like, how can I only have concentration for like three or four sits and then it's gone, you know? I'm sitting here. That's what I spent the 40 minutes doing, is negotiating if I could take walks, where would I walk, what would I do for a month and a half at a place that doesn't have anything. So then I go outside, and I'm all bummed, and I'm sad, and I'm like, okay, I decided I'm going to be a good yogi, and I'm just going to do the schedule, even though I don't have any concentration. Nobody actually has to know that I don't have any concentration, because I'll just walk slow, and I'll do the schedule, and everything will be fine. I can do this. I get outside. And I look up and notice that, so I gotta tell you, February was beautiful. March was ugly, but February, the weather was fabulous. But on this particular day, I get outside and it's cloudy. And I think to myself, oh, now even the sun is gone. My concentration is gone. The sun is gone. Dang, this is gonna be the worst retreat ever. And that's what did it. This walking meditation, I saw the delusion of thinking something was permanent. The thing I thought was permanent, one, was concentration, and then, to make matters worse, I thought the lack of concentration was permanent. It is this constant thinking, this is permanent. I probably acted a fool with laughter when I realized that thinking that concentration or a good sit was all over with 2 weeks into a 2 month retreat is like thinking the sun is gone, not coming back ever. It's just gone. It's that level of foolishness that we get caught in. But the only way to know that you're caught in it is through dukkha. Because the mind will carry on as if the distortion is a fact, except for the dukkha. So, Ajahn Sumedho said, one of the talks we heard by him, he said that you could use suffering as a clue or a key to enlightenment. If we could begin to rethink what we think of as suffering, it could change the very nature of the way we live in the world. Right now, when we think of suffering, even when we talk about it sitting here, it is in relation to how do I get rid of this bad thing that's happening to me? But I'm hoping by the end of the month, you will begin to see that suffering is actually the only way you will ever see that there is a distortion right there. In the moment you think something is got a rub or an edge or an angst or an eh, that's where the distortion is. If you look for the distortion, then you see the third noble truth. You see the cessation of suffering. It wasn't until I began to notice this distorted view that concentration was gone or that the sun was gone forever that I could even begin to see that I'm operating out of this distortion. Prior to that, I sat for 40 minutes trying to figure out how I was going to do a retreat for another month and a half. Bored to death. I certainly wasn't going to come home. Then you'd all say, Tori, you know, could you just hang out there? So I thought to think about impermanence, maybe to sort of help you see how distorted this is, to think about what the definition of impermanence is. Because we talk about impermanence all the time. I mean, the whole point of all our practice, we all know, it's the three characteristics. It is impermanent, it is dukkha, it is no self. We know that. And yet, we all operate as if the very impermanent thing that we all know exists is permanent. So I'll show you how that shows up. I looked up the word impermanent. And here's a couple of words that might make a little bit difference, right? It's temporary. So lasting for a limited amount of time, temporary. It's provisional. So serving for the time being, but likely to change. I mean, we use the word impermanent all the time, but we really don't think of it as temporary or likely not to change. Tanisaro Bhikkhu, he said that it was described as inconstant, meaning that it is not constant. Inherent in all phenomena is this idea that it's not constant. In fact, at the retreat, most of the teachers called it unreliable. So think about this. It's provisional, it's temporary, it's unreliable, and it's not constant. That is the nature of the way all phenomena, all experience exist. But how many of us in this room actually live that way? So take a moment and ask you a couple of questions. How many of you who drove here expect your car is going to start up when you get out there? Right? And if it doesn't, there's going to be some dukkha there. But the problem isn't the car not starting up. It's the distortion that it's going to. Even though we all know in this room, cars don't always start when we want them to. We all know that. But we never expect it to happen. How many of you that are driving home think the traffic is going to be fine? It's dark outside. It's night. Everybody's gone home. I should be able to just get on home in record time. Yeah, no. Some accident happens, something happens, traffic is crazy, and you don't get home. But you'll spend the whole time irritated, even though we all know traffic in Seattle is stupid. We know that. We've seen it. We've watched it, but every time we get in our car, we still drive as if it was 6 years earlier. So our irritation isn't based on reality. It's based on the distortion that affects, that is applied to reality. Take it up a little bit. So how many take these things as reliable? Your job? Your retirement check? Your house? Safety? We take these things as being permanent and reliable, but they're not. And it's that distortion that keeps us from ever seeing this. So when it looks like we might lose our job, instead of turning towards the impermanent nature of things and looking for another one while I still have a job, we spend the entire period fretting over the possibility of losing a job because it should be permanent. There's an expectation in the mind that this should be permanent, and our entire existence is based upon this. I like something that Suzuki Roshi said. He summed up all the teachings of Buddhism in three simple words. Not always so. Our ability to practice confidently is closely linked to how well our perceptions actually match reality. That's what Matthew Ricard said. So the more our perceptions matches reality and not the distortion, the more confidence we have, the less suffering we have. Ajahn Chah has a famous saying. See if I can find it here. He said, one day some people came to the master and asked, how can you be so happy in a world of such impermanence, where you cannot protect your loved ones from harm or illness or death? The master held up a glass and said, someone gave me this glass. It holds my water admirably, and it glistens in the sunlight. I touch it and it rings. One day the wind may blow it off the shelf, or my elbow may knock it from the table. I know this glass is already broken, so I enjoy it incredibly. Impermanence is not so much about sucking up and dealing with sort of, traffic is bad. Right? Because we could do that. That's on one level. We can practice in a way that says, oh, okay, I'm just going to deal with or accept that traffic is bad. Or you could go one step back from that and even begin to see, why are you upset in the first place? Who told you traffic wasn't going to be bad? Where did that concept come from? What makes you expect that your car is going to start when you go out there? So why would you get upset if a motor doesn't start, when it is the nature of engines to not start? It's not impermanence that makes us suffer. What makes us suffer is wanting things to be permanent when they are not. A couple more quotes, one from Ajahn Chah. If you really see uncertainty clearly, you will see that which is certain. The certainty is that things must inevitably be uncertain and that they cannot be otherwise. I want to leave you with one more. There is a world of difference between facts and the truth. We can have so many facts that you don't deal with the truth. You never get to the truth. You have the places of, you have the places where, blah, blah, blah. The people who, blah, blah, blah. The times when, blah, blah, blah. The reasons why, the methods how. And we never get to the human truth. The human truth is as elusive as the air and is as important as the air. Beginning to see where you are suffering because you think something should be permanent when it's not. You can't see that until you start feeling into some of the difficulty. But before you just practice accepting and coming to peace and stillness with whatever that difficulty is, before you jump there, see if you can, or I shouldn't say jump there, before you stop there, see if you can sit a little longer stiller with it to see what the distortion is. I have a feeling you're going to crack up when you see it. Maybe we can just be in silence for a moment.